Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Unbelievable, the fact that you do not understand where I'm coming from. If you don't know the answer to that question, then I think that you are an ostrich. Well, your head must be in the sand. Is your head in the sand? Can you, are you flexible enough to get your head in the sand? My suspicion would be no. I can, you can't.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Are you an ostrich? Thomas, are you an ostrich?
Last time I checked, no.
Okay, neither am I. What is Nigel Pearson talking about? We'll try and figure that out. Mourinho, he's got a war of words with Man City and Arsenal. Juventus win the title again, and a change to La Liga? All coming up, European Football Weekly.
Who will he rely on? Brunch! Absolutely brilliant! Picture perfect from Chris Brunt, and Manchester United are dumbstruck by a thunderbolt!
They struck it beautifully.
Chelsea turning up the speakers on the rest of the Premier League. That's what's happening this week because they are set to win the Premier League title with just three more points needed to claim that title, Thomas.
Should we just call it now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's done.
It's done. Mourinho is absolutely clinical. You know, he is, you want to talk about finishers. Mourinho knows how to finish a title off.
Yeah. And he knows how to really stick it to the other managers.
Oh, doesn't he? Oh, doesn't he? We'll get to that. This is European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. We're going to try and jam-pack as much EPL as we can in this first segment. Because then we're going to Spain. Then we're going to Italy. Might even take a stop in Germany.
Too bad we can't actually physically go to those places right now.
We're going to take you there, though, as best we can
in
here
spirit.
On European Football Weekly on Sportsnet 590 The Fan every Sunday morning between 8 and 9 a.m. at EFWSN 590 is where you can get us on the Twitter. It's how you can interact with the show. Again, I'm Dan Riccio, and that's Thomas Michalakos. So there was a lot of Premier League action yesterday, and we'll get to some of it. Manchester United losing to West Brom, Liverpool beating QPR, and some more craziness at the bottom of the table as well. But there was a lot of stuff happening this week, Thomas, with Jose Mourinho and Chelsea just moving that inch closer to the Premier League title after that Leicester victory midweek. And it's been a lot of he said, she said, and a lot of it is Mourinho taking jabs at his fellow managers, one at Arsene Wenger, the other at Manchester City and Manuel Pellegrini.
Yeah, a lot of smack talk, but a smoke and mirrors, because it's like, it's not right in your face, but they're like backhanded.
Yeah.
They hurt. Those ones hurt the most, I think.
This show is coming to you live before Chelsea plays Crystal Palace this morning. So they may clinch the title right after we finish the show. And we want to talk about them as Premier League title winners or as proposed Premier League title winners. Are they deserved? Because that has been the talking point this week. Are they deserved winners? They haven't been crazy enjoyable to watch the last little bit, and that's why you're hearing whispers of Arsene Wenger saying they don't play a very impressive style, and you hear Manuel Pellegrini saying similar things. But you look back to the beginning of the year, Thomas, and Chelsea were a goal-scoring team.
Yeah, these managers, it's sour grapes. They're looking at little things to poke at. I think you do enough to win. You're deserving of it. I don't care if it's boring.
Yeah.
We saw what Chelsea can do in the first half of the season. So they got to a point now that they don't have to do that. They don't have to overstretch. They can play their style and let the other team fall into place.
I kind of want to agree with Manchester City and Arsenal on this, that teams should, you know, play an enjoyable style of football while they are winning. But the fact that they are saying this about Chelsea is, it's just flat out wrong. Chelsea is the second highest scoring team in the Premier League.
Yeah, we're
so
not.
I guess goals aren't maybe the measure that they want for, you know, an attractive team. But it's just been the last month and a bit, the last couple of months with Chelsea. They know exactly what they have to do to finish off this title and get the Premier League title. And they're not overstretching themselves. They're playing not to lose is how they are playing at this point in time. But earlier in the season, you know, they were fine and they were doing plenty to not only win games, but also excite the crowds.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They played so well in the first half that they can afford to do this now, right? And you saw at midweek when they beat Leicester, they came from behind. They did what they had to do. They scored three goals. I wanted to say they ruined Leicester, but Leicester's looking pretty good still.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, to sit there and say that they're playing boring football, well, they deserve, they can. You can't be, why should I change my way of playing? Now, let's look at Chelsea. They obviously have the quality and the players to play more attractive football, right? We're not talking about a mid-table side or anything here. They have the money. They have the everything. But why?
Yeah.
Why should I play how you want me to play?
Yeah, exactly. And
how do you argue that?
And
you
Mourinho knows, and you look at the last couple of weeks when they played Arsenal, they let Arsenal come at them. You try and break us down because we don't have to win
this game. We don't need to, yeah.
The same thing the week before against Manchester United. We don't have to win this game. They ended up winning it anyways. But, you know, they let Manchester United come at them with a flurry of punches. I kind of equate it to, you know, last night was the big fight.
Yeah, that was a good comparison. Yeah.
Mayweather and Pacquiao, and everybody knows what Floyd Mayweather does. You don't have to be, a boxing expert to know exactly how he has been so successful in his career. He is great defensively, and he's great with his counter punches.
He knows how to win. He knows exactly what to do, and that's exactly like Chelsea.
And he avoids counterpunches from his opponents. And he does exactly what he needs to do to win the match, but doesn't overextend himself, doesn't open himself up to chance, to losing. You know, he knows exactly what he has to do, and he doesn't overextend himself to leave himself susceptible to the knockout punch, which is exactly what Chelsea has done for the last couple of months.
Yeah, because, you know, waking up in the morning, I didn't take the bait, I didn't pay the money to watch the fight yesterday.
You're just such a grunt, like a Grinch.
No.
Don't get along with the rest of the world.
No, I'm professional. I went to sleep on time so I could be nice and fresh for you this morning. I didn't take the bait. I didn't buy it. And thankfully I didn't, because when I woke up, everyone's saying exactly what they say about Chelsea. It was a boring fight.
Yeah, be topical, okay, Thomas, and watch the fight. You know, get on board with the rest of the world here.
Nah, I'll allow you to follow all the trends, Dan.
In any case, look at this. So you want to talk about Chelsea not being a big part of or not being very attractive. Well, Eden Hazard's got 13 goals this year. Diego Costa's got 19 goals this year. And Eden Hazard was the PFA Player of the Year as well. And you look at the assist category, 17 for Cesc Fabregas. That is 7 more than any other player in the entire league.
And another thing Chelsea does.
Chelsea aren't deserved title winners.
Exactly. And another thing Chelsea does well that these other teams may not do well is their under-19s won the FA Youth Cup as well. So they have some talent.
Well, that's because they go out and they buy every young player when they're 14.
And they loan them out to like 12 different teams.
They've loaned out like 300 players this year.
But they're doing it right. I have to say, you can't argue that they're not doing it right. They're developing.
Yeah.
And they're buying players. They have the complete package. So it's hard to look at Mourinho and say he's doing things wrong, because he's not.
And now Mourinho can see the light at the end of the tunnel and that they will be hoisting the title at some point this year. And he is starting to take jabs at fellow managers. Let's hear what he said, I guess, regarding Arsenal, maybe, earlier this week.
You know, I think boring is 10 years without a title. That's very boring. You know, you support a club, and you are waiting, and for so many years without a Premier League title, I think that's very boring.
Ooh, shots fired.
In the face.
In the face. Yeah, that's exactly who else would it be directed at other than Arsenal fans? Because the only teams contending for the title are Manchester United, Manchester City, and Arsenal.
But what made that comment better was his giggle after saying it.
Exactly, and that's... You know, and he made sure to mention Premier League title, because they've obviously won the FA Cup last year and have a good chance to win it again this year. But according to Mourinho, It's still boring not winning the Premier League title. And he's right.
Yeah, it's totally.
Any Chelsea fan is upset that they're going to take this title by just kind of doing exactly what they had to do by playing out the string, by not playing not to lose these last couple of months. No Chelsea fans complaining.
I'm fairly confident in saying that there's not one Chelsea fan out there that would be like, I wish they played a little bit more entertaining football.
Yeah.
I wish they opened up and, you know, catered to their opponent.
So Mourinho then came out later in the week, started talking about Manchester City. I don't know why this came up. Maybe somebody asked him.
Why not?
But he's,
when you're on a roll,
started to take jabs at the other side of the table. And he says Manchester City should have been docked points for their financial fair play disobedience. And he says, basically, they can throw out £49 million, and what does it matter to them? It's just money.
Once again, I have to agree with Mr. Mourinho.
Oh, my God.
I know, it's weird, because usually...
Did you turn Portuguese overnight? What is going on here?
But seriously, don't you think these teams that have all this money to dock them, you know, financially, let's say, right? Does that really hurt? Where will it hurt more with financial fair play? Shouldn't they be docked points? How do you argue against that? Of course they should be docked points.
You can argue maybe that it hurt Manchester City in the Champions League because they had to have more homegrown players in their squad.
But what does it matter in the end when they're going to make the Champions League again this year?
Yeah.
If they were docked points, maybe that fight would have been a little bit more difficult.
And they wouldn't have been fighting for the title for so long as well.
Exactly.
And we'll have to see what happens going forward. But he also says Chelsea will never, never come into trouble with financial fair play. So we'll have to hold him to that in the upcoming years.
I feel like I'm in the bizarre world now that you mentioned it because I'm agreeing with Mourinho.
Carl tweets in. He says CFC don't always look pretty, but they win. 38 games, don't lie. Moo may be obnoxious, but he gets results.
Oh, he's definitely obnoxious.
Yeah, and Manuel Pellegrini responded to that jab at Manchester City by saying Chelsea's boring. Sorry, Manuel. So I know you like to play more expansive football, but why don't you not get your ass handed to you by Barcelona in the Champions League, and then after that put up more of a fight for the Premier League title.
Well, he won't have to worry about boring Chelsea next season because he won't be there.
Yeah, exactly. So he can say whatever he wants. Let's head over around the league now quickly as we've already spent way too much time.
Way too much time.
As we always do. But Mourinho always gets our blood flowing here on European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, at EFWSN 590. Are Chelsea deserve Premier League title winners? They could clinch it today with a win over Crystal Palace. So where do you want to start here? Manchester United's loss?
Why not?
Okay.
I always
so they,
have fun
they
with
fall
that.
1-0 to West Brom at Old Trafford. Three straight losses for the Red Devils. If Liverpool were, you know, half competent over the last few weeks, aside from yesterday, maybe they would be closer than the 5 points that still separates the two.
I think it's four.
Oh, sorry, 4 points.
Well, if they would have beaten Hull, it would have been one.
Yeah, but they didn't.
No.
They couldn't score a goal for like three games as well, which is something Manchester United... They've lost and not scored in three straight games for the first time since 1989. That's crazy.
Yeah, and we're all singing Van Gaal's praises.
A few weeks ago,
A few weeks ago, and now.
Seems like they had top four wrapped up, and they've just let their guard down a little bit. But at the same time, they've had so many chances. Boaz Myhill played out of his mind yesterday.
And he made a fantastic save in injury time as well. But here's the thing. I don't know where I was, but when did anyone say that Van Gaal was almost godlike?
Nobody.
Did you remember that? No, because Van Gaal said in his press conference that he's not God and he could not control this three losses in a row. I just don't remember ever saying Van Gaal is God or anyone else for that matter.
No.
But Van Gaal always surprises me.
I think what Van Gaal is trying to say there in his crazy Dutch accent is that they've kind of played well. They've just been a little bit unlucky in terms of scoring goals.
Well, 26 shots against Albion, 15 against Chelsea. Was it Chelsea? No, 15 against Everton, 17 against Chelsea, 80% possession against West Brom, 70 against Chelsea, 65 against Everton, zero goals.
Yeah, and do you want to hear one more Jose Mourinho
clip
since you bring that up? He talked about possession stats and what they mean in terms of winning football matches. And it was quite funny because I just bring it up because you say it. And we talk about possession stats a lot with Manchester United. And Jose Mourinho had this to say.
Sometimes I ask myself about the future. And maybe the future of football is a beautiful green grass carpet without goals. And in that beautiful grass pitch, the team with more ball possession wins the game.
Why are there so many pauses afterwards?
Because he's trying to figure out the exact wording that he wants to say. But that's great. You know, it's like, screw your possession. We win with a goal. And I think it's maybe you can use it as a jab to their win over Manchester United a couple weeks ago. Maybe that's where it's from. I don't know exactly where this clip came from, but our producer, Emil Delic, found it. And it's perfect. It's from sometime recent. And it's perfect because Manchester United, yes, you can talk about all this possession. Yes, all that and all this. But you know what? David Moyes didn't lose three matches in a row in the Premier League.
No.
And this is where they are right now.
And we're not talking a team that has possession.
They've been unlucky.
Yeah, but
all the shots that they've, you know, amounted over these last few games and not been able to score.
Exactly, because we talk about possession, and yeah, okay, it might not matter, but they're not Barcelona where they have this majority of this possession and they're scoring 8-9 goals in a game, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, you're unlucky, but also you got to take the blame. The players have to take the blame. You have to hit the target. You have to put it in the back of the net after so much.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, by the what the stats say.
Not the manager.
You score every 8 shots on target or at goal. So they should have had quite a few goals over the last three games.
Yeah, point the finger at the player.
By the analytics way of things. So Leicester win again. Nigel Pearson is crazy. You heard him off the top calling people ostriches. Tony Pulis will never get relegated. That we know. Villa win. Sunderland win. It's crazy at the bottom of the table. And we'll get to more of that. But next, we head to Spain. Kieran Canning's going to join us. A law passed that will change TV rights. Maybe spread them out a little bit more. This is very interesting stuff.
Don't get too excited.
Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, European Football Weekly.
Well, how about that? I just got asked to be the head coach at Leicester.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Can they add a second? And he has to end. Suarez with a touch, and the answer is yes, they can.
Ah, what a wonderful goal again. Iniesta's X-ray vision sets a table for Suarezito.
Alves again measured. Suarez! Off the post. You could not cut that any finer.
Demonic skill again off the head. The bombing from above here today, Barcelona. The second-headed goal.
Alba, nice drop, striking. It's Xavi, falls for Suarez, and he puts it in. The flag will stay down, and he's got his hat trick. 8-0, Barca.
I am the passenger, and I ride, and I ride.
We are all passengers. And we just watch Barcelona roll over every opponent they play right now.
As crazy as that 8-0 score is, and yes, they have 105 goals on the year.
Yeah.
They're still 16 back of Real Madrid's record of 121 in a La Liga season.
So they should do that in 3 games.
Yeah, which they've scored 16 in their last 3 games, so it kind of makes sense. You never know. They'd have to do 17.
So they should easily surpass it. The way they're playing right now.
And you said something during the break that was, I completely agree with, is regardless they're playing a last place team, Cordoba.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the Premier League where the last place team could upset the first place team. Never really happens in La Liga. Their trident was starting the game.
Basically, they went with the starting 11 that they go with every week.
Yeah.
This is European Football Weekly. I'm Dan Riccio. Thomas Michalakos here as well. We are connecting with Kieran Canning to join us and talk about La Liga in just a second. But, you know, I know Bayern Munich, they have clinched the title in Germany.
So it's a little different.
But they played Bayer Leverkusen yesterday and pretty much sat everybody that they could. So,
well,
and they played three or four guys that most people don't know very well.
Yeah, but see, they haven't clinched the title, Barcelona, but it's Cordoba.
The dead last place.
Yeah, they're already relegated. You're not going to lose to them even if you put Barcelona B on the field.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
You know, you could play not Martin Odegaard. You could play, what's the Croatian midfielder's name? Alan Halilovic.
Put him in there. Give him a good run.
Yeah, give him a good run because, you know, you don't have to play all three of them. You know, play two. Give Messi a rest. Give Neymar a rest.
You could put the third string goalkeeper in the net. And you're still going to get a clean sheet against Cordoba.
Yeah, and 8-0 is the final there. So Barcelona just all over the place. And incredible 8-0 win over Cordoba yesterday. And they're heading to the Champions League on a high. And joining us now is Kieran Canning here on European Football Weekly. And some big news coming out of Spain this week, and that is a change to the way La Liga TV rights are distributed or sold, I guess I should say. And Kieran Canning joining us now here on European Football Weekly. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. Kieran, good to have you join us again. And you know, we were just talking about that 8-0 win for Barcelona over Cordoba yesterday. Did they really need to play the big three? Like, poor Cordoba. They're going there, and it's just they don't even stand a chance.
Yeah, hi, guys. Well, there's two trains of thought to that, I would imagine. One is that the three of them are playing so ridiculously well at the moment that it can only help them go into these big games they have coming up, particularly against Bayern Munich, to continue to score more and more and more goals than I think they're up to. They had 102 before yesterday, so there was another 6 or 108 for the season. They're playing incredibly well. I think that it's a perfect time for Barcelona in the season, and the fact that it's rare that you get a team that plays so many games in a season like Barcelona do that play their best football in April and May. But that's exactly what they're doing, and that's why a lot of people now are seeing them favourites against Bayern, who looked to have really peaked in the season physically a bit, and obviously suffering from a lot of injuries.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating matchup, and we'll talk about it in just a second. But the big news that came out of La Liga this week is the change in how television rights will be sold. Rather than individually, they will now be sold collectively. Now, this was a law passed in Spain, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an incredibly long and quite tedious process, but just if I can kind of cut it down in a few points. Basically, before this law was passed, as the contracts are set up at the moment, unlike in England or Italy or Germany or most other European leagues, the clubs would sell their TV deals individually to the TV companies. So, for example, Real Madrid and Barcelona would make about 10 times as much as someone like Cordoba, for example, or Rayo Vallecano, because obviously the TV companies just want the Real Madrid and Barcelona games. That gave them a huge financial advantage, not just over the other Spanish clubs, but actually on the European stage as well, because until the new English TV deal comes in, the massive new one with Sky and BT, Real Madrid and Barcelona make significantly more than the top English clubs or Bayern Munich or the top Italian clubs, for example. So as a way to try and balance up the league a bit and try and, you know, add a bit more competitiveness into the league, there was a big push for a change in the law on how these TV deals were sold. It's taken a very long process. There was a lot of infighting between the Spanish Football Federation and the Spanish League, which are two separate bodies, and the government themselves. But finally, they've managed to agree to a deal this past week. And so for the TV rights that will be sold for the 2016-17 season going forward, they'll be done in a collective process that is not quite as balanced as in England, for example, because the way they've done it is that about 50% of the money raised will be split equally. But then the other 50%, we'll still be favouring the bigger clubs, not just Real Madrid and Barcelona, but also teams like Atletico and Valencia, because it's based on how you finished, like positions you finished in the past 5 years, and also things like your fan base, the number of season tickets you sell, the number of members that you have. So Real Madrid and Barcelona will still have an advantage. It just won't be as big an advantage as they've had in the past.
Yeah, and just kind of going on top of that, does this really have an effect on the way Barcelona and Real Madrid do business? Because the way I look at it is they make so much money globally that, you know, a 10, 20, 30, $40 million difference in TV right money might not make that big of a difference for those two clubs.
No, I don't think it's going to make a big difference to Real Madrid and Barcelona. I think it's more the difference that it can make to teams in the sort of middle to bottom part of the league. I know I'm saying that the big teams will still have an advantage, but I'd say the difference is that gap will be quite significantly cut. So you might see, for example, in the future, not as many 8-0s against Cordoba or like 9-1s from Real Madrid against Granada a few weeks ago, because those teams, in theory, should at least benefit most from this change in the law. For example, the teams at the very bottom of the scale should almost double the amount of money they take in from TV. So that could be the most significant change rather than from Real Madrid and Barcelona. This change is not going to affect Real Madrid and Barcelona going out and signing a Galactico or a World Star every summer, and they'll still have the money to do that. It's more about adding a bit more competitive balance to the league further down the scale.
Staying with transfer bans, there was reports Atletico and Real Madrid are going to receive one of their own. Can you speak towards this? Because I know nothing's official yet. What are you hearing over there?
It's very unclear at the moment. That the interesting was the story came out from two Spanish radio stations in midweek that are normally quite trustworthy on these types of things. The two clubs have reacted quite differently to it. So Real Madrid came out very aggressively denying the report, saying that we know there is a FIFA investigation into Real Madrid because Real Madrid said as much themselves in January. They gave the details of, they said there were 51 players that FIFA had asked for information on. Real Madrid made that known, that the fact that these 51 players, according to them, were completely legal under the rules. Therefore, the reader had Spanish nationality, or that their families had been in Spain for other economic reasons, not just football. So, for example, of I think it was four of the 51 players mentioned were the sons of Zinedine Zidane. So he obviously didn't move to Spain because his sons were going into the Real Madrid Academy. He's lived there for many years. So Real Madrid came out very aggressively against it. Atletico, on the other hand, have been quite sheepish, I would say. I mean, they said that, you know, there's nothing official. Once there's something official, we will have something to say about it, but we don't know if there's going to be a ban or how strict the ban will be. So I think that the signals coming out of Atletico is more that they do expect the ban, whereas Real Madrid have been very belligerently saying that they don't.
Kieran Canning, our guest here on European Football Weekly. Just quickly, Real Madrid getting a 3-2 win over Sevilla, but looking ahead to the Champions League midweek and not having Luka Modric due to injury, I think that could be very difficult for them, because he's been big with their win totals this year. With him and without him in the lineup, it's a big change for Real Madrid.
Yeah, he's a huge player for Real Madrid. He's the one that connects everything together at the moment. As you saw last night, they're still functioning up front thanks to Ronaldo. They got Bale back last night. He came on and gave the assist for Ronaldo's third goal. They're hoping to have Benzema fit as well. Benzema trained today for the first time, his teammates, in a couple of weeks. So I'm not sure whether he'd be fit to start, but he should be at least fit to feature at some point. But Modric is the one that kind of knits everything together. My only doubt about whether it would be that much of an influence on Tuesday night is that I think Juventus are missing an even bigger midfield player in Pogba, and Real Madrid are very confident about getting to the final, because if they'd drawn Bayern or Barcelona, I think they would have really felt the absence of Modric a lot more than they will against Juventus.
Kieran Canning, our guest here on European Football Weekly. You can follow him on Twitter @KieranCanning. And Kieran, we always appreciate you doing this, and this was it's fascinating what's happening over in Spain and how things could change in La Liga over the next little bit of time with the transfer bans and the change in TV rights. We'll be sure to contact you again and get more updates on this. Thanks again.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Crazy, crazy stuff, the amount of money that could change for the TV rights there. And again, Barcelona and Real Madrid, they're just insane. 2 points separate them with three games left in the season. Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos. We go to Italy next on European Football Weekly.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Chiellini shielding Muriel off. Back for Padoan. Just wanted to get rid of it, Simone Padoan. And there is the final whistle. The goal by Arturo Vidal. 3 points to put it away. A draw would have been enough. But Juve do it in style. Sampdoria 0, Juventus 1. The 32nd minute strike from Vidal gives all 3 points to the old lady as she celebrates for the fourth year in a row. For the first time since the 1930s.
It's been an absolute era of domination from Juventus. Ever since Conte took over, 3 consecutive Scudetti. Now Allegri comes in and he gets a fourth. They are the Campioni d'Italia.
Get me going here. Get the fist pumping. Get those fists pumping here at 8:45 on a Sunday morning.
You need the blood to move, right?
I might not be wearing enough Juventus gear right now, Thomas.
It's just a tracksuit jacket.
4 straight title wins. It's almost like it's elementary now at
can
this
I ask,
point.
Can I ask you one question? Why does a 1-0 victory in Italy, in a style victory, but in England, it's boring football?
I don't know. Because it's in style because they only needed a draw to win the title, and they shot a 1-0 win against a very good team, actually.
Now, if Chelsea win 1-0 right now, it's going to be boring.
Yeah, it's
boring.
Awful. It's boring. To get back to our earlier comments, it's only 1-0. The Chelsea side, they're not good enough.
But Juventus does it in style.
They don't
Juventus.
Play attractive football. I'm Dan Riccio. That's Thomas Michalakos here on European Football Weekly. Juventus winning the Serie A title for the 4th consecutive season. They do so with 4 games left in the season, Thomas.
Do you know the record?
What's the record?
Consecutive titles in a Serie A?
No, you tell me.
No, I'm asking you. Do you know how many? Like, is Juventus, is this, are they close to
they
like?
They haven't done this in, I think it was the 1930s. So to get a better historical significance on this, we invite Adam Digby on the show. You've heard him here quite a few times, and he is always a great listen. Adam, Thank you for joining us in another big title win for Juventus. And what is the historical significance behind this for Juventus?
Hi, thanks for having me on. Yeah, it's again, obviously, as you said, it's the last time was the 1930s that Juve ever won 4 in a row, which on the surface you think, well, that's quite, that's a long time. But it also takes in the, you've also got to take into account the great success that guys like Marcello Lippi and Giovanni Trapattoni had, where the team was utterly dominant and they still didn't manage to win so many consecutive titles. So that really shows how much that is. And it's 1935, Juve won 5 in a row, which is the record for Serie A. It was repeated by Torino in the 40s. And some people might say Inter in the 2000s, but that would count the one that they were given as part of the end of Calciopoli. So I don't really think that you can put that team in with the same as those two great ones before. And to be honest, you look at Serie A right now, and it's hard to imagine anyone other than Juve winning it again next year, to be honest.
Speaking of Calciopoli, is it 31 or 33 titles for Juventus, in your opinion?
33. question.
Definitely no question. You got to put Thomas in his place every once in a while, Adam. So I appreciate you helping me rein him in here on European Football Weekly. Adam Digby joining us here on European Football Weekly, talking about Juventus winning a 4th consecutive Serie A title. So what happened this year? Because it was a close battle with Roma for quite some time. And then, I don't know, I guess the calendar changed to 2015 and Roma were just a completely different team than the one we saw in the first half of the season.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of factors, to be honest. I think you look at Roma have obviously had a little bit of a collapse. They sort of had a bit of a meltdown over the start of the new year, as you say. But you've also got to look at the way that Juve are playing this year and the way that it's almost like they've had two peaks. They started off the season very, very well after pre-season training. They had a good run of wins and some good clean sheets to start the season. Then they had a little bit of a slump. And as we know, that's when Allegri changed tactics and did away with the 3-5-2. Went to a four-man back line, and they picked up a little bit there. And then I think as the winter started, obviously the Champions League takes a break, so Allegri's been very, very good at rotating the team and making sure that they're fully prepared for each Champions League fixture. But without those games, he was able to play players more regularly in Serie A, which saw the gap open up. And then when the Champions League restarted, when Juve played Dortmund in the second round, he started resting players again, and that made it a little bit closer. And some poor results over the past few weeks have really dragged this out. As you said at the top of the show, there's four games remaining. Juve could have won this a couple of weeks ago had they not lost to both Parma and Torino.
Yeah.
But and people complain, and those results shouldn't happen. But if you look at where they are in the Champions League semi-final for the first time since 2003, and every single time Allegri sends those players out when the Champions League music plays, they deliver. So you have to say he's got it right. As much as those losses are disappointing to him and to the players and to everybody else concerned, it's understandable because they have loftier ambitions. And that's not to disparage the Serie A title. And Juve would never do that. They're not the sort of club who would sacrifice the league to succeed in Europe, but they really have put it on the back burner because they are so dominant in Serie A. They can afford to do that, and the teams like Roma and Napoli, and I suppose you have to include Lazio in that now, have given them the breathing room where they can take games off. And I think particularly the Parma game, you saw the team that was put out was still quite strong, but there was no burning desire to go out and win that game. I think that really shows the difference in coaching style between Conte and Allegri for me.
Juventus Director General Beppe Marotta says that Allegri deserves his Serie A title triumph after being greeted with spitting eggs and kicks upon his arrival. Now, I know eyebrows were raised when he was signed as manager of the club, but was it really that extreme from Juventus fans?
It was, yes. There was a lot of unrest in Turin when Antonio Conte left because it was so unexpected. And it was the second day of pre-season training, and obviously the fans after the summer off, at the start of pre-season, as you know yourselves with teams around where you are, fans turn up to games like that and to days like that where pre-season training has just started. So there's a lot of people around, and obviously Massimiliano Allegri arrived and he was taken around the training ground and to the headquarters, and fans were throwing things at the car and kicking the car because they'd lost a hero in Antonio Conte, who means a lot to Juve as a player and the captain, and then as the coach who came and really transformed the club. And nobody, I don't think there's any other coach could have done that. As great as Allegri has been this season, he could not have accomplished what Antonio Conte did. So the unrest was understandable. And obviously we'd seen Allegri fail with Milan, which now you look back and you think, well, I'm not surprised he failed because they really tied his hands behind his back and took his legs away. But now he came in and he's really surpassed everybody's expectations. He's proven to be a smart tactical manager. He's been great at getting the best from the players when he needs it. He's understood what they need to be motivated and how they need to be rested, and how he's kept other players important who've not played as much. Like you look at Fernando Llorente, and when he's been called upon, he's delivered. He's been scoring important goals. Alessandro Matri's come in, he's scored some important goals. And you look at a young guy like Stefano Storaro, who came from Genoa in January, and he slid seamlessly into that midfield. And when you look at the players Juve have there, for a young guy in his very, very early 20s to be at his first big club and to be able to fit in, that's testament to Allegri. And he's got everything so perfect this season. It really is hard to understate just how good he has been.
Yeah, Adam Digby joining us here on European Football Weekly. Adam, time is not our friend, but Juventus coming up against Real Madrid next week or midweek in the Champions League. 30 seconds or less, a preview. What is Juventus's biggest concern going into this tie with Real Madrid?
I think with Real Madrid, the biggest concern for anybody is just the sheer quality that Real Madrid have got going forward. I mean, for all you, they've done very well this season. There's only two teams like that, really, Real Madrid and Barcelona. Nobody has the depth of talent that they possess in attack, and that will be a very, very stern test for Juve's defence.
All right, perfect, Adam, and we'll be sure to talk to you as the tie goes on. Thanks again for joining us, and you can find his book, Juventus, A History in Black and White, and just get him on Twitter, at ADZ77, and you can find the link there. We'll tweet it out, at EFWSN590 as well. Thanks again, Adam. We'll talk to you again soon.
Cheers, guys. Ciao.
So another win for Juventus, and implore you to go out and get Adam's book on Juventus, A History in Black and White, if you want to know all things about Juventus and even a little bit about Calciopoli, a better reminiscent view of what happened back then.
And I just want to say, I do agree, it's 33 titles.
It is.
Just to say.
33 on the pitch, baby. I don't care if they took them away. Yeah, let's do creme de la creme. Cash rules everything around me. Green gets the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. That's the song I know and love. Not the one I played last week when Emil Delic was not here. We fell apart. Just couldn't handle Emil Delic not being here to keep us on tap.
How dare you play a remix?
So, being it the start of a new month, we're going to look back at April and give creme de la creme 11 for the month of April. Thomas, you want to kick it off?
I'm going to say it's very bottom heavy. So, we'll start off with Casper Schmeichel in net, Hector Bellerin, Wes Morgan, Jaurès, Okoré, and John Stone as the back four.
John Stones was unbelievable against Manchester United. We'll go with Charlie Adam, Mesut Ozil in the midfield, Esteban Cambiaso, who's been unbelievable for Leicester.
The ageless wonder.
And Ander Herrera for Manchester United. Finishing off the forwards, Christian Benteke, who's been ridiculous, scoring 41% of Aston Villa's goals this year. And you had one.
Honorable mention. I wanted to put him in here. He's had a great April and a little bit in March, he kicked it off. Glenn Murray from Crystal Palace.
Little Pardew magic.
Yeah, which is completely over now, as
exactly.
We've seen.
As we've seen for Crystal Palace. Chelsea en route to a Premier League title. Want to thank Kieran Canning for joining us. Want to thank Adam Digby. Want to thank Thomas for being here on a Sunday morning.
Oh, you're so sweet, Dan.
Producer JD Bunkus didn't do anything, so I shouldn't call him producer. but he showed up. Good for him. And shout out to my lovely lady, Violetta. It's her birthday today. So,
ooh, happy birthday to your better half.
Happy birthday. She is a big fan of Ferencváros in Hungary, where she is from.
All Hungarians like Ferencváros.
Second in the Hungarian League this year. I'm Dan Riccio, Thomas Michalakos, European Football Weekly. Back midweek, Champions League semifinals, baby. Talk to you then.